Well, good morning once again, everybody. It's good to see you. It's good to be here. It's been a little bit of time since I've been here. I think just about a couple months ago, I was here, what was it, 2-3 weeks in a row? And then I headed south a little bit, went down to Florida. And that's really what I wanted, how I want to start my sermon out today. I want to back up just a few weeks. I want to back up just a little bit, because on my trip to Florida, I came upon some very interesting observations. You see, I had a trip much like you would see when if you watch the movies Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Have you guys ever seen that movie? John Candy and Steve Martin. It's probably one of the funniest movies I've ever seen in my life until I had this trip to Auburndale. And I suffered similar travel dysfunctions and disruptions much like they did in the movie. And I was supposed to arrive in Auburndale roughly, well, actually, I was going to fly into Orlando. My plane landed in Orlando. So there I had to drive to Auburndale by roughly about an hour. But I was supposed to arrive in Orlando roughly about 4 p.m. on Friday. Make a long story short, I didn't get there until after 9 o'clock. It was delay after delay after delay after delay. And finally, after the last delay, as we're getting ready to leave, I think it was Charlotte, North Carolina, in the airport there, we're all getting ready to load onto the aircraft. We're all ready. We've already waited long enough. We're getting ready to get on the aircraft. And one of the ticket counter people, you know, one of the stewardesses, get on the microphone and they say, "Folks, the plane's ready, but unfortunately we have no crew to fly you out of here." So we did. We had a plane, but we just didn't have a crew. But what it did was it gave me plenty of time, ample opportunity just to sit back a little bit. And oftentimes, like I like to do, I like to sit there and just observe people. Anybody else like to do that? I just sit back and watch people pass by, and it's amazing some of the things that you see. It's a good lesson in human behavior, and if you ever get a chance to do that, just take some time, whether you're at a mall, an airport, you've got some just time to kill. Just sit back and watch people. It really is interesting. Some of the funny things you see, and some of the things you see, brethren, quite frankly, aren't so funny. As we were waiting on the aircraft, and this would have been in Charlotte after we left from Columbus, landed in Charlotte. Again, another delay. There was an observation that I made that really wasn't so pleasant, in my humble opinion. But as we're standing in line, you know, because what happens is when your plane gets delayed, that throws your schedule off from that point to the next point, so you have to get up to the ticket counter and make other arrangements to get another flight to another destination just to get to the original destination you're supposed to be at. So if you don't make other arrangements at the ticket counter, well, guess what? You may never make your destination. You may be a day late, you know, maybe several hours late in the case that, you know, I suffered through, several hours late. But there was an observation of human behavior that just reminds me of something. Reminds me a little bit of something that I wanted to pass on to you today. And as I go over this sermon, you'll excuse me a little bit if I stutter just a little bit, because what it did was it gave me opportunity to do a series in Columbus. I've done a series of sermons now, and I'm going to do at least one, if not two more, concerning the law of God. But as we're standing in line, there was this young lady, probably, I'm going to just take a guess here, late 20s maybe, early 30s, somewhere thereabouts, give or take. And she had a little toddler with her, about the age of my youngest, about the size of my youngest, Nicholas, back there. Just a little guy. And as we're standing in this great big long line of people waiting to make other arrangements to get to the ticket counter, to make other flights, make other connections, this young lady walked up to the counter. You know, she didn't go through the line, but she kind of walked up to the side. And she approached the ticket counter, and she asked a question. I didn't hear the question. I was too far away. You know, no one really knows what she asked. We have to make a lot of assumptions, but it could have been anything like her child was hungry, was thirsty, where can she get some water? You know, we never know what she's going to ask. But at that same moment, there was a gentleman, and I use the term loosely, standing in front of me. I use that term very loosely, and gender only, as a matter of fact, because his actions were a disgrace. But he shouted out to her in front of her child, in front of, I don't know, 200 other passengers, "Hey lady, the line's back in the back here in case you didn't notice." And I thought, well, that's really no way to talk to a woman in general, is it? That's really no way to talk to people. And I found myself getting a little bit of a righteous indignation worked up. I didn't like that. I didn't like how we embarrassed her. I didn't like how we put her on the spot. And like I said, no one knows what she asked. She was only there for a few seconds. It wasn't a big disruption. It wasn't a big deal. We don't know what it was. Maybe she needed some medication. Maybe she needed some medical attention. We don't know. But as Christians, aren't we supposed to give people the benefit of the doubt? Okay, wasn't that big of a deal. It didn't take that long. If this guy wouldn't have shouted out, probably 90% of the people would not even have paid any attention to what she did. But as he yelled this out, I thought, you know, where does this guy come off talking to people like that? I just didn't understand it. It was just something that just really took me by surprise. But anyways, I kind of shook it off, and he's standing right in front of me. And the time comes to eventually board the aircraft. So I'm standing in line. I'm waiting my turn. You know, they usually call sections. Now it's time for section one. Now it's time for section two. Section three and section four, you're next. So I'm waiting there in line, and I walk up into the, I guess it would be considered a plankway down there. You know how they have that little tunnel that takes you down to the aircraft. And as I was standing in the door of the aircraft, it got a little bit congested. Just a little bit congested. Because, you know, people, they get on there, they take their luggage, they're trying to stuff them in the top, they're trying to stuff them in the bottom. It takes a few minutes. Okay, big deal. Big deal. If you're going to fly, that's what you have to expect. That's just one of the things you put up with. And as I began to make my way through the aircraft door, as I began to make my turn to the right, I noticed that the stewardess was coming towards me. Now, anybody that's been on aircraft knows there's only really room for one person to make it down that aisleway. And as I was getting ready to stop, this hand came up on my chest and stopped my movement forward. So I looked down. Guess who it was? Guess who it was? It was the same man. I don't know if it was the way I looked at him or he'd realized what he did, but again, I felt the anger. I was frustrated. At that moment, James tells us to confess our faults to one another, right? I didn't feel very Christian. I didn't. Just like everybody else, I'd waited for hours upon hours upon hours to get an aircraft, and then I've watched this behavior, and then when he put his hand on my chest, I thought, oh boy, I don't like this. I didn't like that feeling. So I either gave him a look, or he realized what he did, and he quickly removed his hand, and I just remember thinking to myself, thou shalt love your neighbor as yourself. I'm reciting this stuff because I'm trying to maintain myself. It wouldn't look very good if a minister made the national news on getting kicked off an aircraft because he put his hands on somebody like they did him. But it just goes a long way to show you something, brother. It just illustrates something to us. Do you ever get a feeling that the patience of the citizens of this world are growing short? You ever get the feeling people are running out of patience? Well, as I made my destination, I landed in Orlando. And by the way, if you're ever going to fly to Florida and you have the opportunity to either go to Miami or another airport, please don't fly into Orlando because it is a busy, congested airport. So I made my way down to my luggage and I picked my luggage up and I had a rental car waiting for me, made a reservation. And after I got my luggage, I looked at all the rental car areas and I thought, oh, great, you know, there's nobody in line. I'm going to make my way out of here quick. Because I still got an hour drive down to Auburn down. It's already after 9 o'clock, almost 9:30. And started looking around and thought, you know what? There's only one car company here with a huge line. And once you know it, it was mine. There was probably about 40 to 60 people right in front of me. I mean, it was a huge line. So guess who had the best prices that day and we made our reservations? Yeah, that's what happened. But again, I had time just to sit back and observe people. I just made some observations. And there were some acts, some conducts in that line that, quite frankly, were embarrassing to someone that would call themselves an adult. You know, people, when they get irritated, they start acting a little spoiled, if you will, a little childish, you know, whatever you want to say. But I started to bring in these observations together, and I started to ask myself, when it concerns society in general and people in general, would you agree if I made the statement that the love is waxing cold? When you see the way people interact with one another, when you see the way they talk, when you see the way they act, when you just sit back and observe, It just appears to me that the prophecies of Jesus Christ, Matthew chapter 24, that the love of many will wax cold in the end days, many people's love, brethren, is starting to wax cold. It really is. Turned on the TV over the last several months, and this is some of the things that I've witnessed. Did anybody witness the elderly people get punched, get beaten? It's hard to talk about because it really is a disgusting display of behavior. And these elderly people, brother, they couldn't have been 80, 90 years old, and then someone had the audacity, had the nerve to walk up and punch an elderly woman in the side of the face two or three times for a little pocket change. For just a little bit of change. I'm sorry if that makes me a little bit emotional, but I didn't like seeing that. I didn't like seeing that a bit. What did she do to deserve that? And what kind of a person does that? It's something I'll never understand until you look at it from a perspective that love of many is waxing cold in our society. Heard a story the other day on the news where I believe it was two college students were executed, shot to death by two people. Why? Last time I heard, there was no motive. Just because. And on Bill O'Reilly the other night, he had a little segment on soft violence. Anybody see that? On the soft violence being portrayed out there? What's being done nowadays? What you see with technology and the internet. Not that the internet's bad, don't misunderstand, if it's used properly. But what some of these young kids are doing nowadays is they're actually filming these soft acts of violence. So what they're showing is on this, I believe it was it YouTube? One of those internet cyberspaces, I guess you could call it. I'm not really into the internet a whole lot, but you know what I mean. And what they would do, they would pull up to drive-through restaurants. And when they were taking their order, and once they received their cups or whatever they were drinking, and when someone would turn around, then they would take this cup and they would just smash it right into their face. And I have to come to the conclusion that the love of many in our society is waxing cold. Why else would somebody do that? And I talked about this one-on-one with some of the brethren in Columbus. And I asked them, I said, you know, is it just me? Maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm more aware of it. Or is it just more and more? Is it just more of these acts are starting to come to the surface? Is it the media? Is it me? Or is it really just more? And I think we came to the conclusion finally that I think it's a little bit of all the above. A little bit of all the above. See, brethren, we live in a world in general that has forgotten God, has forsaken God. And because they have forsaken God, they have forgotten love. They have forgotten love. They've forgotten how to show it. They've forgotten how to express it. They've forgotten what love is really about. And they really can't give you a good definition of what love is. And really, as an emotion, if you think about it, because love is an emotion, it's hard to define. Because love can be an abstract concept. It means a lot of things to many different people. Until you come down to the Bible, and we can come down and get really clear and really succinct on this thing called love and what it is. And most of the world has walked away from that because they've forgotten God. This love is waxing cold in our society. Love is defined by the author of it, and that's God. And how we express this emotion is largely dependent for you and me on how God defines it. Love is an important topic, and it really just embodies so much other topics. I mean, like I said, I've started this topic on love and the law and how they're really intricately related to one another. And it's opened up a huge topic, and I'm doing a series now on the law of God and how love is woven in that. It plays an important role. And there's a question that we have to examine as we go on to this today, and I'm going to get into the topic here in just a couple seconds. And the question I want to examine today is this. Has love been done away? Has love been done away? And I want to get into this just a little bit. And I want to break this down into a couple different categories. And like I said, I've got two different ideas here, and I've got things scratched out. Arrows going this way, arrows going the other way. So it might take me a couple seconds to get this rehashed in my mind. But I've broken this down into four different categories, and I don't think we're going to get through all of them today for time's sake. But this is what I've got it dwindled down to for the sake of the sermon. We're going to look at today what the definition of love really is. The second part is going to be that love is actually learned. And love, thirdly, is central to the doctrine of Jesus Christ. And then we'll really get into the question, has love been done away? And if we don't get into it completely, brethren, that's okay. Maybe I can reschedule another time to come up here and finish it. But I really want to get through this, and I really want to start out today by examining the famous love chapter in 1 Corinthians chapter 13. Let's just turn there with me, if you would, please. Has love been done away? 1 Corinthians chapter 13. You see, one aspect of love that some people don't realize is that you realize that love is described in the Bible as a gift? Love is a gift. And it's something we can't take for granted. We really can't afford to do that. And as a gift from God, and as a gift that we're able to give others, and especially we take into consideration the prophecy of Jesus Christ in Matthew 24, love is the gift. Love is that action that must endure through this age. Love must endure through all of this that we're witnessing nowadays. Let's just go down here to verse 29 of chapter 12, and we'll just work our way down through this a little bit. We'll make some points as we go through this. But let's just get into our mind what Paul says about love. And let's think about this. Are all apostles, Paul says to the church in Corinth, are all prophets? Are all teachers? Are all workers of miracles? Do all have the gift of healings? Do all speak with tongues? Do all interpret? So he's going down through and he's listing all these various gifts, and he's trying to show the Corinthian church that all these gifts come together for the edification of the body, and they're all important. That's what Paul's talking about. And then he comes down to verse 31, and he makes a very significant, poignant statement as far as I can see it. He says, but earnestly desire the best gifts. And then the statement that he makes here, I've always found interesting. He says, and yet I show you a more excellent way. He's starting to really get into his topic here. He said, I'm going to show you a more excellent way. Though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I have become a sounding brass or a clanging cymbal. Useless. Making no sound at all. No distinctive sound. Just making a sound that really has no discernment to the listener. And though I have the gift of prophecy and understanding all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I could remove mountains. That's pretty strong faith right there, isn't it? That's strong faith if you can move mountains. It really is. He says, but have not love, I am nothing. So we start to see how this topic of love is important and central to the doctrines to the Christian. It's very important. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned, but have not love, it profits me nothing. Here's all these good works. Here's all these good miracles. Yet Paul says, if I don't have love, I am and I have nothing. That's a strong statement. That's a strong statement by the Apostle Paul. It profits me nothing. Then he gets on to explain how love is expressed. Because what Paul, when he's talking, what he's going down through and he's talking about the exercise of love on believers, and the exercise of love from believers. That's what's in the backspace of this, in the backdrop. And then he gets down to this and he says, love suffers long and is kind. Love does not envy. Love does not parade itself, is not puffed up, does not behave rudely, does not seek its own, is not provoked, thinks no evil. And actually, if you get into the Greek here, according to the translators, I don't speak Greek, but I only have my concordance to go off of. It says this, when it says thinks no evil, basically what it says here in verse 5 is it keeps no accounts or records of evil. That's what it means. Keeps no records of evil. Does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth. Bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and here's this word here, endures all things. Love must endure, brethren. It has to endure. In verse 8, love never fails. But whether there are prophecies, they will fail. Whether there are tongues, they will cease. Whether there is knowledge, it will vanish away. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part. But then that which is perfected has come, then that which is in part will be done away. When I was a child, I spoke as a child. I understand as a child. I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away those childish things. For now we see in a mirror dimly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then I shall know, just as I also am known. And now abide faith, hope, love. And he says these three, faith, hope, and love, but the greatest is what? Love. And as you go down through this descriptor of this, through all these verses here of what love is, I've come to realize that love is more than just a word. Love is more than just an emotion. Love is action. Love is action. I can tell my wife Angie all the live long day that I love her. And if I come home from work, I don't do this. This is just an example. I don't do this. But if I were to come home from work every night, or every, let's say every morning since I work nights, and I were to come home and say, sweetheart, I love you. Now where's my breakfast and why isn't it warm? Get it on the table. What am I expressing love? Words are worthless if they're not backed up with the proper action. Talk is cheap. It means nothing. Don't tell me. Show me. And that's what God wants us to know. But let's just back up a little bit. And let's go back to verse. Let's just stop here at 4. And let's see what happens if we take love out of the picture. Well, there'll be nothing that suffers long. We can take out kindness so much as, so you forget about being charitable to your brethren or your fellow man. Forget about that because it doesn't exist. There's a lot of envying going on without love. A lot of parading of oneself. A lot of being puffed up. How about a lot of rudeness in our society without love? Without love, we would seek our own. You know, love, in a lot of ways, is about sacrifice. If someone were to ask me, how do you know your wife loves you? I don't think I could come back with a response and say, I just know. It's not that I just know. It's because her actions tell me something. And you can tell when somebody loves you, and you can tell when they're giving you lip service. Because it's an action word. And as Paul goes down through here, we also start to see that love is the quintessential motivator for all of us Christians, especially in the utilizing of the gifts towards the brethren for edification, which is what gifts are used for, but also in regards to our fellow man. Dave talked about relationships. Well, brethren, if we don't know God and we don't know love, how in the world can we ever express and have healthy relationships, not just with one another, but what about the world? I could have let my love wax cold when that gentleman yelled at that woman. And I could have let my love wax cold when he put his hand on my chest. But you see, brethren, to the Christian, we live not to seek our own. We're called to be examples to Jesus Christ. And we have to remember His commandments. You see, love as an action word doesn't always agree with our feelings and emotions, does it? Sometimes they contradict each other. But it's yet through that perseverance of love, through that endurance, that hopefully we can learn to put our emotions to the side if it doesn't agree with love and do the right thing. And to do the right thing. Love is linked to truth, and endurance is the critical factor, and it never ceases. The knowledge of love is vanishing. The world has not taught love in the proper context to its children. Why is that? They've forsaken the Creator. They've forsaken what love is, and they've forgotten the definition of it. But Paul here, in the end of chapter 13, gives us a little bit of hint, gives us a little bit of advice about this thing called love. And in chapter 14, in verse 1, he says this, pursue love. We can never end our pursuit of this thing called love if it's going to endure all these trials and all these examples that we see in the world, because you and I, brethren, just that little lesson I told you about through my examples and the things that I was feeling when all this stuff happened, because if we let this world get to us, and if we don't stay in pursuit of this thing called love, guess what will not endure within us? Love will fail. Will fail. But over here in 1 John chapter 4, I want to start getting into this definition just a little bit more. 1 John chapter 4. And if you ever really need a good lesson on what love is, you can go through this whole book of the first epistle of the Apostle John. And I'll tell you what, this epistle has schooled me many, many times on this topic, because he really nails it. He really gets to the heart of the issue on this thing called love. In chapter 4, and beginning in verse 7, we're going to start to see that the definition of love really isn't that difficult. It's really rather simple. Sometimes we make things more difficult than what they really are. When you look at this, it really is quite simplistic, if we're going to define it. If we're going to define it. Beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God. Now, if you do away with God, take Him out of society, take Him out of our households, take Him out of our families, take Him out of our schools, take Him out of our government, guess what else you're taking out? Think love can wax cold in these days if we look at it from this perspective? I think it is. I think it is. Now, with that being stated, I also want to follow that up with this statement. I'm not saying that all the world is wicked, all the world is bad. I'm not trying to shed a bad light on the whole world, because as you look around at humanity, when troubles occur, when tragedy strikes, it's through those times that we see some of the most random acts of kindness ever displayed in human history. So I don't want you to think that I'm sitting here coming down on the world in general, because we do see a lot of kindness and a lot of example of love in the world. I'm just saying, the farther and farther away that we walk away from our Creator, and this is key, His commandments, we start to walk away from love itself. And then we start to see the opposite of what the Apostle Paul is portraying in 1 Corinthians chapter 13. He said, let us love one another, for love is of God, and everyone who loves is born of God and knows God. You want to talk about relationships? What's the key to it? Whether towards God or our fellow man? Love's the key to it, because it suffers long, does not keep record of evils. I see that all the time in the workplace. People argue so much, and sometimes they're arguing over things that happened 6 months ago, 3 months ago, and some little things that have happened on down the line since then, because people won't let it go. They keep the record of it the whole time, and it stews, and it boils, and it turns them, well, it can turn them bitter. And the next thing you know, trouble's coming. Why? Because they couldn't let that record of offense go. He who does not love God does not know God. You want to know the definition of love? Here it is right here. Three words. God is love. Now, as we go down through this, we'll see that there's also a proper expression of that love, and that's where the world goes away. Now, you can look at this, and you can watch some of the TV evangelists on TV, and they can give you the perfect definition of what love is. God is love. It's right here in the writing. It's right here in the scriptures. But yet, when it comes down to expressing that love, we'll see this as we go down through this, hopefully, if we get time, that they make a right-hand, right-angle turn away from the definition of how it's properly expressed. Why? Do away with the commandments. Do away with the proper expression of that. In this, the love of God was manifested towards us. That God has sent His only begotten Son into the world that we might live through Him. In this is love, not that we love God, but that He loved us and sent His Son to be a propitiation for the saints. Now, did God just say, humanity, my creation, I love you, and then just walk away from it when things went bad? No. He proved His love through action, through deed, and through the ultimate sacrifice any parent could ever make. The action and the deed that proved God's love towards mankind was the sacrifice of His innocent Son. Through deed, through action. It gives me goosebumps to think about that. Beloved, if God so loved us, we also ought to love one another, sacrifice for one another, give up our sovereignty for one another. And Jesus took this a step further. He said, you've heard it of old times that you shall love your neighbor as yourself, but I tell you, you shall also love your enemies. And that's where things get hard. That's when putting love into practice, expressing love, becomes hard. It does, because it's not natural. Like I said in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, that oftentimes the expression of love often, or the exercise of that love, often contradicts what our emotions are. So that's what makes it so hard to overcome. No one has seen God at any time. If we love one another, God abides in us, and His love has been perfected in us. Who should people see when they look upon us, not only in the good times, but in the bad times? Who should they see standing before them, metaphorically speaking? They should see Jesus Christ in us, no matter what's going on, no matter what we're doing, no matter the situation. We have opportunity to shed light on Jesus Christ and bring Him glory no matter what. And if I would have let my temper get away with me in the airport, would they have seen Jesus Christ in me? Or would they have seen a poor example? The goal was to let others see Christ in us. By this we know that we abide in Him and He in us, because He has given us of His Spirit. And we have seen and testified that the Father has sent the Son as a Savior to the world. Whoever confesses that Jesus is the Son of God, God abides in Him and He in God. And we have known and believed the love of God has for us. God is love. Here's that definition again. And he who abides in love abides in God and God in him. John's got a lot to say about love. Love has been perfected among us in this, that we may have boldness in the day of judgment. Because as He is, so are we in this world. There is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear. Because fear involves torment. But he who has fear has not been made perfect in love. We love Him because He first loved us. And this is going to lead us into our second point. How do we love God? How do we love our fellow man? A little bit elementary, but it's good to review every now and then. It reminds me of a little bit of story when I come to this verse here in 18 about there is no fear in love. And sometimes, again, turning on the TV or going down the street and witnessing some of the displays that go on, I saw one time a demonstration. And it was a demonstration that was against, trying to figure out how to word this because I know there's children out here, but it was against homosexual unions. It was against what's going on in our country now, in which laws are trying to normalize this thing called homosexual union and trying to legalize that type of marriage. But there was an example that I saw. Someone was holding a sign up, and it was a protest sign, and it was a church group. And I've really got to watch what I say here, because the words on this sign were really not repeatable, not good to say from the podium up here. But this is the gist of it. I'm trying to be careful here, because it was really quite nasty. It basically said, "Burn, you expletive." And that's the best way I can put it. Burn in bad place, you expletive. And I thought, what kind of an example is that? Yeah, we should be protesting. We should be out there doing the right thing. But I thought, to me, it almost conveyed a message that what these people were wanting to see was the destruction of another human being. It's like they wanted to see it. They wanted to see this burn when God the Father says, "I don't have any pleasure in the destruction of the wicked." He said, "I find no pleasure in that." And if these signs that were being held up there and these chants that were being done expressed nothing more than to want to see this happen to somebody else. And that's not a right perspective either. We have a goal. We have a mission. We have a responsibility to get this message of witness and warning out to the world and to say the right thing, but it's just as important on how we say it. It's just as important on how we say these things. That was a bad display. Let's just turn back over here, just a page over, to 1 John chapter 5. And we're going to start getting into the topic of how exactly we express this love properly. How we do this. Through this definition. In 1 John chapter 5, we'll just begin up here in verse 1. We'll just read through this. "Whoever believes that Jesus is the Christ is born of God, and everyone who loves him, who begot also loves him, who is begotten." Now, what do we hear a lot of times? And I'm not picking on them. This is just what we hear in the mainstream sermons. All you have to do is what? Believe, right? All you have to do is believe for salvation. But when you take a look at what it really is to believe on the name of Jesus Christ and God the Father, and what it really means to believe on them and express that love properly, it means a whole lot more than just merely confessing Jesus as the Christ. Again, it takes action, it takes deed. And we go down through this, we'll see it. "By this we know that we love the children of God." How is that? "When we love God and keep His commandments." If you do away with the commandments, brethren, if we take them out of our lives, we might as well take God and put Him right out of our lives, because we don't get a true definition and a true understanding of who God is, what He's doing, what He expects. And like Dave said earlier, how do we expect to ever have the proper relationship with God? How do we express that love, that godly love? By the keeping of His commandments. "For this is the love of God," in verse 3, "that we keep His commandments, and His commandments are not burdensome." After being in God's church since roughly 1998, I've often found this a little puzzling. That how anybody, let's just take the Sabbath day since we're here, how could anybody look at God's Ten Commandments, that Decalogue, and the Decalogue, by the way, was the one rule of the law that was always supposed to be perpetual. It's perpetual. It's supposed to be everlasting. You can prove it existed in the book of Genesis. You can prove it's going to exist when Jesus Christ returns. The Decalogue was written on stone. It was placed in the Ark of the Covenant. And all the other laws of ancient Israel were based upon this Decalogue. And it's based on love. But how in the world could anybody come to Sabbath services and think, "Oh, what a burden. What a burden to be here." How could it be looked upon as a burden? Of course, we could take a look at also some of the historical context of some of the pages in the book of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and we can actually see, and we can actually prove, that it was through the wrong interpretation of law that the law did in fact become a burden to the people of the days of Jesus Christ, because the religious leaders of the days were adding things to the law that weren't lawful. And it was becoming a burden to people. It was. But when you take a look at the commandments that are based on this thing called love, and you see the wonderful opportunity that God the Father and His Son Jesus Christ has given us to assemble together with people of like minds one day a week to get away from the world, to get away from the things I was talking about, some of the examples that we see, to renew our minds, to refresh and rejuvenate this thing called love, how in the world could we ever consider this day or any of the other part of the Ten Commandments a burden? You shall love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy strength, with all thy mind. Burden? How could that ever be a burden? You shall love your neighbor as yourself? A burden? Look at the wonderful ramifications just those two commandments have upon which all the law and the prophets hang. Peace with your neighbor? Oh boy, that's a burden. Well, I don't want that. Peace, love, and relationship with God the Father? Who doesn't want that? And yet there are some out there who teach that the Ten Commandments are a burden and a yoke upon man. It's a wrong perspective because they don't hold the keys to this thing called love and the definition thereof. In verse 4, for whatever is born of God overcomes the world, and this is the victory that has overcome the world, our faith. Who is he who overcomes the world but he who believes that Jesus is the Son of God? And I think what I'll do here, brethren, just for time's sake, because I think I've been speaking for a little bit now, I'll just skip over some of this. And I think what we'll do here is we'll go to Mark chapter 12 just to illustrate this point a little bit further on how just important this law, these Ten Commandments, are, how they're intertwined with this thing called love. And as you go down through this, you'll see Jesus Christ summarizing the Decalogue here, and you'll see some words. You'll see some words that he uses. And it's interesting, because we just read here that the law is not burdensome, and yet some people want to teach that the law is burdensome and a yoke. But look what Christ says here. In verse 28, we'll just begin reading down through here. Then one of the scribes came, and having heard them reasoning together, perceiving that he had answered them well, asked him, which is the first commandment of all? Which is the first commandment? And Jesus answered him, the first of all the commandments is, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Now, as we go down through this, look at these positive words that are used to describe the law. And you shall love. Many times when people look at the law, when they look at the Ten Commandments, you know what they focus on? Thou shall not. Thou shalt not do this. Thou shalt not do that. And really what the law is saying, what God's saying through the law, is thou shalt love the neighbor as thyself, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your strength, with all your soul, in the proper context, and you have all the freedom to love in the proper context. You have all the freedom to do that, but people often see thou shalt not. This is the first commandment, and the second, like it, is this. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. There is no other commandment greater than these. These are the two great commandments. So the scribe said to him, well said, teacher. You have spoken the truth, for there is one God, and there is no other but He. And to love Him with all the heart, with all the understanding, with all the soul, and with all the strength, and to love one's neighbor as oneself is more than all the whole burnt offerings and the sacrifices. And of course, Christ finishes up and says, you are not far from the kingdom of God. So you start to see as we go down through this how intricately woven and how intimate this word called love is when it relates to God's Ten Commandments. How are we supposed to love properly? God is love, and He gives us the definition on how to express that said love. Over in 1 Timothy chapter 1, Paul says some interesting things to Timothy. And Paul gives us the purpose of the Ten Commandments. Paul gives the purpose of the Ten Commandments to Timothy, this young evangelist. Paul, an apostle of Jesus Christ, by the commandment of our God and Savior and the Lord Jesus Christ, our hope, to Timothy, a true son in the faith, grace, mercy, and peace from God our Father and Jesus Christ, our Lord. As I urged you when I went into Macedonia, remain in Ephesus that you may charge or give commandment to some that they teach no other doctrine. He's talking about doctrine here. What were they going to teach? Nor give heed to fables, endless genealogies, which causes disputes, rather than godly edification, which is in faith. And for some reason, during these times, genealogy was a big deal. You know, genealogy, you know, if you could stand up here and say, you know what? I'm of the tribe of Israel. I come from the tribe of Dan. Or I come from a lineage of royalty. So what? That means nothing nowadays, because the Bible's pretty descriptive and clear that if we reside in Jesus Christ, if we have died with Him through baptism and been raised with Him through baptism and continue therein, guess what? There is no Jew, there is no Greek, there is no male, there is no female. Christ is in all and all. So guess what? We're all Israelites. We're all Israelites, and somehow this was becoming a point of contention. Genealogy means nothing, and I'm getting sidetracked here a little bit, but they were giving heed to fables and genealogies that brought disputes and not edification. And then he says it all right here in verse 5. Now the purpose of the commandment is love from a pure heart, from a good conscience, and from sincere faith. From which some, having strayed, have turned aside to idle talk, desiring to be teachers of the law, understanding neither what they say or the things which they affirm. But we know that the law is good if one uses the law lawfully. So how do we use the law lawfully? We look to it for what it's premised on. We look at it for what it's meant to be. Vance Stinson has coined a phrase, and I think rightfully so. He's broken down the law into a couple different categories on the purposes that it served. One of those purposes of the law was something that Vance Stinson refers to as the judicial aspect of that law. And that judicial aspect of the law is a part of the law that says, Angie, you're guilty, you must die. That's the judicial aspect of the law, the one that demands our death. However, there is an aspect of the law, especially when you view the Decalogue, God's Ten Commandments, that is always meant to be perpetual, everlasting. And it's something that Vance Stinson has called the educative role of the law. And this is why I say that love in our society is waxing cold today, because they have forgotten this part, this role that the law fulfills. And that is the educative purpose to bring us to who Jesus Christ is, what He expects, and He's trying to teach mankind just exactly how it is that we're supposed to express this thing called love. And if you do away with those commandments, you do away with love, you might as well do away with God, because God is love. What's the purpose of the commandment? Love, to teach us that. And if we're not learning that, and if we're not enduring these things, by keeping these things in mind, brethren, our love could wax cold as well. And you know, this is not a theme as far as love being the basis of the law, just for the New Testament. Because we can go back to the Old Testament, and God says, oh, that they would have such a heart in them, that they would love me and fear me and keep my commandments. This theme runs concurrent, brethren, from day one of mankind until the day Jesus Christ returns, and it remains perpetual through eternity. This aspect of love, brethren, and how it relates to the law is a big one. And as I said before, I'm doing a series on this. It's going to take me probably, I've already done two, and I'm probably going to do at least three, if not four, of this. And there is no doubt, at least in my mind, brethren, that the love is waxing cold in our world. I have no doubt about that, just based upon what I've seen. It's It's not to say everybody's bad, like I've already stated, that there are many, many acts of kindness, random acts of kindness. People put themselves in danger for their fellow man every day, so please don't misunderstand. But I'm just saying, some of the things that we hear from theological points of view, some of the things that are being taught, run contrary and are the antithesis of love. Because God defines it, God is love, and He teaches it. Consequently, the practice and expression of love for God and our fellow man is starting to go by the wayside. We have a duty to teach love, not just through word, but through action and in truth. Has love been done away? Absolutely not. Sometimes we take a look at the examples out there, it's just been put on a shelf, been put up, been put away for the time being in the hearts of some. Definition of love is God. The Ten Commandments serve as a guide to teach us on how to express that love. God has given us the laws of love. If we want to keep our love from waxing cold, God, love, law must endure. May God continue to bless and keep each and every one of you.